The next slide shows you a little better how a population looks, where this is a mild strain, although there is a great deal of inflammatory cells in the vicinity. It doesn't show the profound necrotizing effect that the severe strains show. And practically every motor neuron here is showing this early stage of developing basophil material around the cell membrane and around the nuclear membrane, and then some cells that are essentially normal. We don't know, of course, whether they've been uninfected or have recovered, but these are infected, and at this stage we have high concentrations of virus when we grind this up and examine it for viral content. The next, after the first week, this central thinning out with the dense formation apparently of new chromophil material, I'll refer to a central chromatolysis. And one of the striking things in the period of recovery at about 2 weeks and beyond is that in some of these cells where you have apparently normal distribution of basophil bodies, there's also an acidophilic inclusion body, which means almost certainly that this cell has been infected, since we only find in the early stages, in the pre-paralytic and first and second days of paralysis, we only find cells with these inclusion bodies in those instances where the basophil material, the ribonuclear protein, is essentially wiped out. So the acidophilic body appears to persist when the regeneration of the vital ribonuclear protein is taking place. And very rarely we see some odd appearances that we cannot interpret because they don't occur frequently enough. This is a rather astonishing change in the nucleus of cells which otherwise seem essentially normal so far as the cytoplasm goes, which means probably that they are cells which are functional. There's also a similar sequence of events, incidentally, in spinal motor neurons which are regenerating their axons after surgical interruption of the axon. There's a retrograde reaction, which is essentially the one that appears as diffuse chromatolysis, followed by central chromatolysis, followed by recovery of the ribonuclear protein. Skip over this part because we are hard pressed for time. Let me just summarize because I haven't given myself enough time to go into detail on some of these rather interesting things. First of all, the infection of the central nervous system consists of a primary invasion of nerve cells affecting the protein synthesizing machinery and a secondary inflammatory response of variable intensity. Second, the infection of nerve cells may be severely destructive with some strains of the virus or relatively mild with others. And this variation of motor neuron destructiveness or virulence is unrelated to the immunological type of the virus. Third, the highest concentrations of poliovirus in the spinal cord are found on the day preceding and the day of onset of paralysis, after which there is a steep decline to extinction of virus between the first and third weeks. Fourth, peak concentrations of virus are correlated with a diffuse loss of cytoplasmic basophilic substance in almost the entire motor neuron population, irrespective of the severity of the paralysis. I think that's of extreme importance because it indicates that for the most part, the whole population or something close to it is involved, but obviously a fairly large component are still functional, although infected with virus. At least that's my implication of what we've seen. Now, complete loss of basophilic substance or chromatolysis tends to be followed by severe nuclear changes and motor neuron destruction, whereas milder degrees of chromatolysis may be followed by regeneration of the basophilic substance, beginning at the cell and nuclear membranes and spreading inward toward the nucleus. Sixth, in many motor neurons showing severe diffuse chromatolysis, one may find intranuclear acidophilic inclusion bodies of the shape and size of the nucleolus. These persist into the recovery stage. In other words, the cells may look normal, but they're no longer virginal. Whereas in the acute stage, they're found only in severely chromatolized motor neurons. In the later stages, they are found in motor neurons in which the basophilic substance is fully regenerated. So I think there is this decisive evidence of the recovery of motor neurons. I recall that when I first was involved with this, that I had obtained the impression from people talking about pathology that all neurons which were infected were destroyed. This is not the case. Our quantitative studies reveal that poliovirus infection of the spinal cord and brainstem usually involves most of the lower motor neurons, even in those monkeys experiencing relatively mild degrees of weakness. In seeking for an explanation for the recurrent weakness of recovered polio patients many years later, one is reminded of the fact that in 1941, Dr. Howe and I had found that an intrinsic injury, such as surgical interruption of motor neurons, which produces non-lethal chromatolysis, could render the motor neurons resistant to poliovirus during the regrowth phase of the interrupted axon. Could we have the last slide, please, the very last? During the first week after axon section, the affected neurons are not resistant to virus injection. This is such a case, you see, complete destruction of the motor neuron population. And on the side where the axons have been cut, and these motor neurons show central chromatolysis, the infection has evaded them and they remain intact. we have many cases like this where we have devastation on the side that has been undisturbed, whereas on the side where the axon has been interrupted, you have a sparing of cells into the recovery period, so that there's no longer any danger of being involved by the virus infection. The point I want to make here is that the motor neuron is not conceived of as a stationary event, but as a process which is labile, and where one can modify in one direction or in the other, so as to make them either more or less vulnerable to virus infection. I think I'd better close with that and take up any other matters in the question period, if there is time.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bodian. One question I have, you state that in the spinal cord, there's an extinction of the virus within 1 to 3 weeks. However, there would still be a viremia, I presume.
Viremia would not last that long, because in the case of viremia, we have the effective antibody which would eliminate and does eliminate the virus in the blood. And that means that within a few days after occurrence of the viremia, one might begin to see coming in antibody, and the one precludes the other.
Dr. Weekers, Columbus. I would like to ask if there's any way of knowing more information about these motor neurons that survive but are supposedly scarred. Is there any way of determining what percentage of the motor units that survive end up with permanent scarring? And what is your feeling about possibly these scarred motor neurons being the ones that are the fatiguing motor neurons, or the motor neurons that are having trouble later on?
I think, for one thing, it seems to be a very large proportion of the population that becomes infected. In other words, if there is a fairly severe degree of paralysis at the height of paralysis in a particular extremity, it is very likely that 90% or more of the population will be infected. That does not mean that they will all go under. There we've estimated that with a middle level of loss of neurons in the acute stage, that half of those remaining would have been infected, would definitely have been infected and would recover. So the extent of the involvement is almost complete, and I would think that would mean that almost everyone that survives is scarred, if they've almost all been involved in the acute phase, then those that survive obviously have been scarred. And I think that's very likely, because there are these other incidental signs that there has been change. For example, the acidophilic inclusion bodies say this is no longer a normal cell, as long as that abnormal structure is present. In other words, there's not been complete recovery. of anything except, as among those things that we can visualize, except the basophilic substance.
We have time for two more questions.
My name is Dalakos Bethesda. Do you have evidence whether the inclusion bodies represent viral particles? And if that's the case, is there a possibility of reactivation of those?
The inclusion bodies persist after such time as we are unable to isolate virus. In other words, the inclusion bodies are present for weeks, whereas we are able to demonstrate virus usually no longer than 2 weeks after onset. Is that?
So, but what are the viral particles due to? What do they have inside? They have parts of neurons or parts of the virus? Well, these particles, the inclusion bodies that you have.
Well, the inclusion bodies are not composed of virus. The evidence is that the virus replication, multiplication, takes place in the cytoplasm. And the changes in the nucleus are secondary to the changes in the cytoplasm. So whatever is in the nucleus is not viral. It is the result of the viral infection of the protein synthesizing machinery in the cytoplasm.
Sir, Tom Tomlinson, Newcastle. I think you said originally that some of the animals were allowed to survive for a year. I wondered what the remaining neurons looked like 1 year after the acute infection.
They looked normal.
Looked normal. Thank you.
Whatever that means.
Miller, New York. Dr. Bodian, what were you using for infectivity studies? What technique to determine whether you could isolate virus from the monkey brain?
Those were the days when we did not have the tissue culture. Yeah. So the common method of testing for the presence of virus and the concentration of virus was to inoculate monkeys into the brain.
The reason I bring this up, and what Dr. Dalakos brought up as well, is that in tissue culture studies of poliovirus infection, the concept of a recovering cell is almost non-existent. And one has to wonder whether some of these late changes that we're seeing in neurons really aren't a low level of persisting infection, just couldn't be detected by the monkey inoculations.
That's always a possibility because it's hard to prove a negative. I think that's, one has to admit that there could be latency thus far unproved of the poliovirus.
I wasn't specifically speaking to the issue of latency, but just long lasting. There are other very artificial models, I might add in passing, not as nearly as natural as these studies and as elegant as these studies were, that do suggest that if you intracerebrally inoculate mice, which was the second stage of animal passage, or third stage, that you can in fact get prolonged infection in the brain that will go on for, you know, longer than a 3-week period.
Thank you very much, Dr. Bodian. We're going to break for lunch now. I just have a couple of quick announcements. Lunch will be served, I think, just up here adjacent to the foyer. Once again, there are men's rooms on your right and women's rooms on the left. After lunch, there will be a tour of the Warm Springs grounds and the Institute. For those of you who would be interested, and this afternoon's program begins promptly at 2:30.
That concludes tape 2B.